We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and I'm here with John Clark, professor of telecom at University of Kentucky. Hey, John.
Hello, Andy. Glad to be back now.
And we were talking about Google, but it led to a comparison in that last segment that I wanted to follow up on. We were talking about the Gmail offering of Google, and you mentioned the Kroger card that you resisted, and I see the similarity. That is that they are both tools of surveillance by marketers. But I do think there are differences, and I'm curious whether we have the same take on them. So my question is, do you still use your Kroger card? That's my first question.
I do use my Kroger card, and the reason for that is, as I said, I succumbed to a certain amount of marital pressure to do it because, compared to the other Kroger shoppers, we were indeed, I think, at the end of this past year, my receipt gives me a running account of how much money I've saved over the course of the year by using my credit card.
Right.
And it was something like $630 or $40 over the course of the year. Now, if I was willing to find myself another grocery store that was convenient and that didn't have a discount card program, and I could count on the prices being lower than Kroger's because Kroger has artificially high prices that they can then discount. They're really working on the same margins as the stores that don't have discounts. But here's what I'm getting to is
I think
that,
you're asking if there's a parallel universe out there.
Well, they do exist, but the thing is I'm not willing to forsake my neighborhood Kroger since it's so handy. And so I finally gave in and said, okay, I'm not going to stand on principle and spend $600 more a year than the folks and families in similar situations to me. And I gave up my principled stand. And now I do let Kroger collect information on every purchase that I make and what Kroger I do it in and at what time. And I also have absolutely no say over what Kroger decides to ultimately do with that information. Primarily, I believe they're interested in their own sales, their own marketing, but you never can tell what they might do. And the example I use for my students is that, after you've graduated, you get a health insurance policy, or your employer provides one, and you swear up and down that you don't smoke. And then your insurance company or investigator working for your insurance company is able to ascertain that you buy a carton of Camel Lights every week. And then, of course, that changes the premiums that you pay. Or they may discover, for instance, that in visiting the Kroger pharmacy, you buy a certain combination of drugs that can only be described as an AIDS cocktail. Or any number of other things. Or, for that matter, your employer discovers that you go through two or three 18 packs of Budweiser every week. Now, that's all information that can be used about you one way or another. And we never have any guarantees about what Kroger may or may not do.
They've promised us they aren't going to do that.
Well, I had a Sears card once upon a time. And
Sears never has promised this.
Sears promises. They say, we will never share your information with anybody that's not authorized. And then they sent me the privacy disclosure pamphlet. And it turns out that under the terms of the contracts that I'd signed, then they tell me all the people that they will actually share information with. And it turns out to be practically everybody.
Anybody that gives us money is eligible.
That's right. Anybody with whom we have a business relationship
is authorized. Yeah, they always word it that way.
Right.
Well, and this gets back to the opt-in, opt-out thing on these privacy statements, right? The Congress was under pressure to put from citizens groups to word this as an opt-in. That is, before they can share or sell information that they gather through your account with them, you would have to agree to in writing to opt-in that, yes, you can use my information in your database. Instead, business interest prevailed, and Congress passed the law as opt-out. So you get these statements, and if you mail in the thing, theoretically, they're going to remove you from any database that they sell to anyone else.
But, theoretically.
And what percentage of people would actually opt out? It's tiny, and they knew that. And they also knew if the Congress had gone the other way, this whole marketing ploy would be severely crippled.
Well, I think you're right about a tiny minority of people doing it. And one of the things that concerns me is that most people just don't seem to care. I just don't believe that they're generally aware of the amount of information that's collected about them in any way. Now, How in the world did we get off on this? We were talking about Google.
Well, Google's in the business of collecting information.
In a big way.
And so so before we wrap that up, I do want to say that I think that I think we both know from experience with students that students have very few concerns about this. And even when you educate them in a technology course so that they understand what the issues are, they will often still shrug their shoulders.
Because that's what people their age do.
Well, partly it's that, but I argue, too, that it's the same with mass media stuff. If you talk to them about advertising, right, and you say, did you notice they're now putting ads in places you didn't see them before? They're less attuned to that than you and I are. Part of that is media literacy kinds of things. But I object to having ads thrust in my face just because I'm standing in the men's room with a little time on my hands. And
little what on your hands?
I can't get away. And so it's... it's a little, it rubs me the wrong way to see the ads like that. And so other people, it doesn't, and young people in particular, they aren't bothered by ads like that.
No, they've grown up with it. They've grown up in an era of more commercials on television and radio than we ever experienced. And not only that, they've also grown up in an era of the World Wide Web when at least this initial banner ad thing was prevalent, and now we've moved on to other forms of advertising that they're just used to seeing accompanying whatever content they look for on the World Wide Web.
Yep. But it's also the fishbowl phenomenon. That is, you don't notice, the fish doesn't know he's living in water. And the average person doesn't pay much attention to the amount of advertising they're exposed to. And when it comes to privacy, you can tell people that your information's out there, but if you grew up with that, if the information's always been out there, you've always had a Visa card, what are you going to do? That's just the way life is now.
Well, I can tell you that occasionally when I happen to mistakenly wander off the bank of the river and find myself walking on along the bottom, I feel like I'm drowning. And I feel like I'm drowning in advertising myself.
Well, I know I agree with you. It's amazing the places they've added it to just in the last 10 years. And this is for another segment, really. But, you know, they now put it in places where it's not actually there. So when you're watching a baseball game and it's on the wall behind the batter, but it's not actually on the wall in the stadium, it's only on your TV that it appears on the wall in the stadium.
Oh, that's like the little yellow line on the football
field. It is.